It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My first guest today is Kailash Satyarthi. Satyarthi has freed tens of thousands of young people, some just 5 or 6 years old, who were forced into servitude. In 1980, he founded the Save the Childhood movement and has acted to protect the rights of more than 83,000 children from 144 countries. In the late 1990s, Satyarthi was a lead organizer for the Global March Against Child Labor that was aimed at raising consciousness about millions of children abused worldwide in a form of modern slavery. For his decades of work as a children's rights and education advocate and an activist against child labor, he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2014. Kailash Satyarthi is coming to Iowa City next Tuesday to speak at the University of Iowa. His topic, working to end child slavery. That's at 6 p.m. in the evening in the Memorial Union. It's free and open to the public. Kailash Satyarthi, what an honor to have you here on our program. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Give us an outline, an idea of the extent of what we would call child slavery today in 2016.
It's most ironical that in this age when we are conquering Mars and other things, we still have millions of children working in slavery. In fact, 168 million children are working as child laborers, and out of them, 85 million are working in extremely appalling and hazardous conditions, what we call the worst forms of child labor. So the UN estimates are that we have 5.5 million children in full-time jobs as child slaves, and many of them are born and grew up as slaves. Some of them are sold and bought like animals and even lesser priced than animals. Their cry cannot come out from the houses, from shops and workshops and mines. So they are living as slaves, which we have been reading in medieval age.
Is that primarily in certain countries?
It's a global phenomena. We have different forms of modern-day slavery in the richest countries, including the United States. There are children who are trafficked from the neighboring countries, Hispanic countries, and they are put to work as child slaves, and they are traffic victims. But of course, we have the largest number of child slaves in Africa, and particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, and then in South Asia, and followed by some other countries. But unfortunately, now this present Middle East crisis is also fueling child slavery. Thousands of children who are forced to leave their countries and their homes, they are most vulnerable and now being used by the traffickers and sold to other places and other countries. And they are made slaves and prostitutes.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about child slavery here in the United States. I think many of our listeners will be surprised to hear there is such a thing here.
Yeah, it's also unfortunate that a number of minor children below the age of 18 are victims of trafficking from some countries and working mainly in agriculture sector. I have come across many of them in the West Coast areas, and there are some minors also brought from Sri Lanka and from other Asian countries to work in threads of in East Coast also. In New York City. So these children, many of them actually don't have legal documents, and that's why that added to their vulnerability once again. Because they are the cheapest source of labor, they can work day in and day out, and especially in agriculture sector, they are handling with electric appliances and machines, heavy machines, as well as the toxic material, fertilizers, and other chemicals. So that makes their health jeopardized with that, and they are facing a lot of health hazard situations.
You've had contact with thousands and thousands of young people. Do most of them, I guess, do some of them, do they see themselves as child slaves? Or do they see themselves as just getting by in a very, very difficult part of the world at a difficult time for them?
Some of them know that their freedom has been compromised and they cannot go back to their homes. And if they are forced to live like child slaves in any part of the world, that goes into their minds, and then it adds up as a part of my kind of mindset slavery or mental slavery. So they lost all the hope to go back home. Only last 10 days ago, I freed a group of children, and one of them has been trafficked from Bangladesh to India, and he was sold several times and worked as child slave. And later on, he was forced to change his name out of fear. Also, his identity, he never told anyone that he comes from Bangladesh. So after freeing him, when I was doing some sort of counseling and talking to him as a friend or with a lot of love and respect for him, he started telling his story, and suddenly he said that he can never go back home because he is from Bangladesh, and it was quite a surprise for many of us. And finally, we decided to contact the Bangladesh authorities, and within a week or so, he is going to meet his mother after 8 years. And when he was trafficked, he was like a 7-year-old child.
Mm. Kailash Satyarthi, you have freed, as I mentioned at the outset, tens of thousands of young people. You said just 10 days ago, freeing this group. How do you go about freeing children who are being trafficked?
Normally, parents of these children approach us. If somebody comes to my office, can see how the mothers are sitting and crying and waiting for us to help their children to be freed because their children have been lured away or stolen or trafficked on the pretext of good life. And sometimes some money is given to them as an advance money, as a debt. And then after a year or so, they realize that they have been cheated. And by the time the children might have been transferred from one to another place. So on the basis of those complaints, we start finding them. We take the help of police in tracing and searching them. And then we have to cooperate with other authorities related to labor and so on. And we rescue, we conduct secret rescue operations, undercover operations, sometimes in the middle of the night. I have conducted many operations in the middle of night or odd hours early in the morning to avoid any kind of violent reaction. So we go and rescue them physically and hand them over back to their parents. And the law is in our favor, luckily, so we make use of law so that the employers could be punished, the slave masters, though it is not an easy task. And it's also very dangerous. I lost two of my colleagues. One was shot dead. One was beaten to death. I have my broken leg and broken arm and broken back and head. So this is always a risky action to conduct a secret raid.
Mm-hmm. What lessons have you learned in your more than three decades as an activist here? Do you feel you're making headway?
Definitely, definitely. I have learned that if the people come to know that slavery does still exist, and this is an evil. This is against humanity, but also it is against the development and education and the future of humanity. And the future, the humanity is on the stake. If one single child is enslaved anywhere in the world, we cannot call ourselves civilized. So if that kind of education and consciousness is raised, then the people respond positively. And we have seen the number of child laborers, for example, have gone down from 260 million to 168 million, and many of them were slaves also globally during last 15 years or less than 15 years. So we are making headway. Now the consumers are much more aware, media is much more conscious and vigilant and active. Similarly, the corporate world is much more sensitized, and sometimes they feel threatened if they come to know that children are enslaved in the supply chain. So the business and corporate response is also positive. But most importantly, the poorest of the poor in the world started realizing the value in education and the power of education. So all these factors are positive and leading us to the permanent solution and put an end to child slavery. And I'm very confident that this is going to happen.
I wonder if you could give us some hints what more we could do as individuals, as consumers here in Iowa or across the Midwest in the United States. How, for instance, do we know if the products we buy are not made by enslaved young people? And I know you founded Rugmark. This is a scheme that tags all carpets made in factories certified as child labor free. But if we're buying other items besides rugs, how do we know?
It is very difficult, to be very frank, but the easiest thing is that if the consumers ask the shopkeepers who are selling apparels or sporting goods or toys, and if they are very cheap and brought from Asian countries, Latin American or African countries, then there is possibility that these products are made by children. But if the question is asked by every consumer or many consumers that please tell us and guarantee that whether these things are free of child slavery or not, then this will help in generating pressure on the shopkeepers and eventually on the manufacturers, importers, and everyone, exporters. So that will help in putting pressure. Secondly, once we know that child slavery exists in the world, anywhere, then the social media could be used. This is very powerful and almost cheap, very, very cheap or free. So the social media interventions by way of making petitions or just questioning the incident of child slavery anywhere in any country will also help in generating pressures. One can send letters also to the local politicians, like in Iowa, former Senator Tom Harkin has been extremely helpful in this regard, and he has always been the champion, global champion for the cause of child labor and child slavery. So politicians can also play an important role, and we have to tell the politicians to be active, as Senator Harkin has been. So there are so many ways to do it as consumers, as a sensitive citizen, we can play our role.
Kailash Satyarthi is my guest, winner of the 2014 Nobel Peace Prize for his campaign for the rights of children and young people. You were awarded, as I just mentioned, in 2014, the Nobel Peace Prize. Fairly unfamiliar, unknown figure worldwide. When you received that award, Kailash, how has it changed your life?
It has changed in a sense that now I'm able to bring this most neglected and ignored issue to the highest level of political and social discourses. So that is one thing I could see now. Of course, I have been fighting in many countries for so many years, but now that has gone to a higher level, the whole fight. And more importantly, the many of these unknown activists and organizations in poorer countries, they feel very, very empowered, and they feel that Kailash is one of them. So the end of slavery is achievable, and we can do it. So that has brought tremendous power in them, and I'm trying to encourage them, and especially the young people who have been marginalized, and some of them were former child slaves and child laborers. I get letters and emails from them, and I am very thrilled. So I'm also working with them to engage them in the fight against child slavery. So those things are changing. Otherwise, my routine work is more or less the same, except I cannot go to conduct rescue operations so often because now I could be recognized. It was much better that the people did not know me or my face, so I could do it comparatively easily. But now it is getting difficult.
Mm. More recently, I understand you've launched operations to rescue girls sold into abusive forced marriages. Tell us about that a little bit.
This is also a modern form of slavery. And unfortunately, hundreds of millions of girls worldwide, more than actually 160 million of girls are married at a very early age. And this is a big fight. In India, we are working on many fronts. Legal front is important. We are making use of law, but people are not aware of the law, so the legal education is another aspect. But social education against this evil of child marriages is very, very critical in this sense, engaging the communities and the villagers, parents and families is equally important. And then we try to empower the youth themselves to take the leadership role at the village level, the community level, and they should become the champions and change makers against child marriages. So that is very, very helpful. There are many girls who stood up against child marriages and they became icons in their surrounding villages, and that has helped in many ways creating a ripple effect against child marriages.
Mm-hmm. Why is it so important to key on the youth leadership? Because you would think in these villages the youth don't have the power that the adults do.
I'm very, very confident based on my own experience in so many years that the youth are not only enthusiastic and energetic, but their minds and souls are purer. They have much more stronger component of idealism and morality. And if it is properly harnessed and promoted, then they can definitely become stronger moral voices than the elderly people who are made to compromise on many things and become more diplomatic in telling the truth and raising their heads high, as the young people do. So I strongly feel that every young person is a change maker inside, is a leader, is a champion, but slowly that goes away. So in it, before that is that drains out, it is important to build the youth leadership right from the bottom to top, and they should not be considered as the future of the humankind, but they are present, and we should feel that they are the present.
Mm-hmm. What more could governments in the present day be doing to end child slavery?
Well, the government, if the governments are really genuinely working to end it, it was not impossible. Though it is difficult, but not impossible. So the governments have to ensure that there are good laws and these laws are enforced. The accountability is also a big question, that whosoever is responsible in the government system for the enforcement of laws should be held accountable, right from the police to the judiciary. There should be time-bound measures to punish those perpetrators. So that was the government. That should be the government action. But also they have to invest adequate resources as preventive measures to ensure that the reasons which create child slavery or perpetuates it at ground level should be addressed. May it be some sort of social protection programs to the parents or incentive programs in schools, along with quality and good quality, quality and free education for all children. So investment on education is also a major issue. Look at the situation that only $22 billion are additional dollars which are required for educating children in primary schools every year. And that is just 4.5 days of global military expenditure. 4.5 days of global military expenditure can bring all children to school in primary classes for 1 year.
Mm. We have
so
just
that investment must be made by the governments.
Mm-hmm. We have just a couple minutes left, but I'd like to ask you, if your passion to fight for children's rights and young people's rights, did that start early for you, perhaps also as a child?
Yes, of course. It was my first day of schooling when I encountered a boy my age sitting outside the school gate. And that has shocked me, and I asked to my teachers and others. Everybody tried to convince me that this is not uncommon. And then one day I asked to the boy and father, they were cobblers, and working outside. So the boy was shy, but father replied that, sir, I have never thought about it, and I had been working since my childhood, and so my father and grandfather were. And then he answered that probably you don't know, he said, you don't know that we people are born to work. And in fact, that made me angry as well as gave a new perspective in my life, in my childhood, that something is wrong somewhere and people are trying to convince me in a different way. The reality is that there is something which is imposed on them, and that is the evil that cannot be tolerated. So I started helping children and trying to find out some way out during whole my student life. And when I was in university as a university student, I did something. But there was no other person or organization who was working on this issue. So it was most difficult time to learn from my own experiences and then to create my own path.
Mm-hmm. We have just a minute left, but you mentioned you were angered by seeing that boy outside of the school and thinking that that was just his lot in life. And in 2015, you gave a TED Talk about anger's role in changing the world, and that we are always taught that anger is bad, but this is not the case in some cases, in your case.
Well, if anger is the reaction to some of our egos and selfish interest, wasted interest are killed and then we become angry, then it is very personal and it goes in destruction and violence. But if we are angry towards things around us which are not right, then we can strongly protect that anger, preserve it properly, and turn it to a very positive energy, because it's an energy that could be transformed into positive energy in ideas, new ideas, in finding solutions, and then execute those ideas in action to make the world a better place. And that I have been doing, and I'm still angry. I don't think that the anger has ever gone from me.
Kailash Satyarthi, thank you so much for joining us. Winner of the 2014 Nobel Peace Prize for his campaign stretching back more than three decades for the rights of children and young people. Kailash Satyarthi, thank you so much for joining us this half hour.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Satyarthi will be coming to Iowa City next Tuesday. You can see him speak in person at the University of Iowa. His topic, Working to End Child Slavery, that's at the Memorial Union on the University of Iowa campus. It's free and open to the public. Coming up in just a moment, I talk with Jeffrey Toobin, a new staff writer for The New Yorker. He'll be speaking tonight at the University of Iowa. We'll ask him about the controversy over that vacant ninth seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. That's coming up. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.